of the goals of parenting is to pass our values on to our children. We want to provide our kids with convictions they'll need to move through life. After all, we've been around for a while. We know that many of the impulses that people have aren't the best strategies for living life. But kids don't know that. How can we help them understand that there is a way to live life that works? Following God's principles is the best way to live.
That's what we'll focus on in this session. As we go more deeply into the four areas of the conscience, we'll start with doing what's right and give you some tools for helping your children do the right thing.
God has placed within every person a moral GPS system. It's called the conscience. Simply put, the conscience provides inner promptings to do the right thing and avoid the wrong things in life. Don't mistake the conscience for truth, though. Although the conscience is a moral compass, it can be wrong. Its job is to tell us to do right and avoid wrong, but it needs to be educated.
And that's what we're going to talk about in this session. Children sometimes find themselves in difficult situations, and parents aren't there to guide them. What will they do when faced with an ethical dilemma? As you help your child grow in this area of the conscience, you'll see significant growth. We start this session with a story about one girl who had to make a difficult decision.
I'd like to tell you a story about Jessie. She was 12 years old, and she asked her mom if she could go to the movies. Not being a movie-going family, Mom checked out the movie and decided that this was an acceptable movie. Besides, her friends were going and one of the other moms was going along, so she felt like this would be an acceptable thing for them to do. So she told Jessie that she could go to the movie. Well, when Jessie and her friends got to the mall, they found out that the movie was sold out. The chaperone says, well, you know, if your mom said that you could go to that movie, I'm sure that she would let you go to this other movie that was very similar. But Jessie wasn't sure. So she called her mom on her cell phone, but for whatever reason, her mom didn't answer her cell phone. So Jessie decided that she would sit in the lobby while her friends and their mom went in to see the movie. The real important meeting happened during the debriefing with Jessie and her mom. When mom found out about this, she could have said, what? And called the chaperone and says, what are you doing leaving my daughter in the lobby? Or she could have said, you know, if the chaperone said that you could go in, it would have been all right for you to do so. But mom, realizing that this was a significant conscience issue, decided to stay right there with her daughter for a little bit. Honey, I like the way you made a decision here. Tell me, what were you feeling in the midst of this decision? Jessie said, well, I was kind of sad that I couldn't go into the meeting, but I felt like I was doing the right thing. Now, I'm sure that Jessie has a lot of things to learn about life, many things in which her parents are going to help her grow. But now we have the nuggets of some significant conscience development, and mom chose to nurture that in her daughter's life.
We've given you an overview of all four parts of the conscience. Now we want to take each one and go more in depth. Talk about what that part of the conscience really looks like in a child's life and how we can develop some parenting strategies to encourage each one of these four parts of the conscience. You may have identified in your child an area that's particularly weak or particularly strong in these four areas. Children don't necessarily have a strong conscience or weak conscience, but these four areas are distinct and different. So maybe they're strong in one area and weak in another. So you'll want to take advantage of the strong areas to strengthen the weaker ones. But we want to give you some parenting strategies that go along with each part of the conscience so that you could be thinking about that as you think about your children. We want to start with the part of the conscience that deals with doing what's right. Now, when we talk about doing what's right, we're not just talking about morally right. We're just talking about doing the right thing, being responsible, starting your homework when you're supposed to, without being told, doing your chores, taking out the trash, cleaning up a mess, just doing the right thing around family life and not waiting for an external prompter, but responding to the internal prompter within the conscience, within your heart, and doing the right thing. Now, as we've studied these four parts of the conscience, we've identified an emotion connected to each one of them. Because as we said earlier, the conscience doesn't actually speak to us, but it makes us feel something. If we're doing the right thing, we feel good about that. If we're doing the wrong thing, we feel uncomfortable about that. Those feelings come from the conscience. So as we talk about doing what's right, we would suggest that the emotion motivating us to do what's right is a sense of obligation. I just got to do this. You know what that feels like. You walk into the kitchen, you see a mess, you just clean it up. There's a sense of obligation. It's just the right thing to do. I just do it. Maybe you've got a long to-do list, and so you feel like, I just got to start working on this stuff. There's a sense of obligation that moves us forward to do what's right.
It reminds me of my grandson, Hudson. 5 years old, he knew that he wanted to take his plate off the table when he was done eating and put it on the counter. Nobody had to tell him to do that. Now, I'm sure it came from years of practice with his parents who were doing a great job with him. But he just knew that when you're done eating and you're excused from the table, you take your plate and move it to the counter. So when I got up from the table and I left my plate on the table and I didn't move it to the counter, he says, Grandpa, don't forget to take your plate. You see, he had this obligation, this sense of duty about taking your plate off the table. Now, don't we wish our children would have that in a lot of areas of life? We want to talk to you more about how to develop that in your child. This inner sense of obligation, sometimes called maturity, sometimes called responsibility. It's all part of the conscience at work in our children.
And where does that sense of inner obligation come from? We would suggest that we have rules in our heart, internal rules that determine how we should live life. We all have them. As parents, we have internal rules that tell us what to do, when we should do it. We call those internal rules convictions. We have convictions about life. We determine this is the best way to live life. It's a rule I have for myself. It's how I want to live. It's an internal rule that we call convictions.
Now, all of our children have convictions, and some of our children have faulty convictions. I mean, these are things they believe. These are operating principles under which they function, but they're faulty in one way or another. For example, some children believe that if mom asks them to do something, they ought to be able to get to the next level on the video game before they respond. That's a conviction that some children believe. Another child might believe that if my brother's annoying, I have the right to punch him. That's a conviction that some children have, you see. What we're trying to do here is look at the convictions that our children have because they form the sense of obligation in our child's life. If we can work on this area of convictions, we can do a lot to help our children grow.
One of the jobs we have as parents is to pass our convictions onto our children. We want our children to develop convictions in their heart that are similar to ours because we believe in those convictions, don't we? We believe that this is the right way to live. This is it. This is what I've learned in life. And so we want our children to hold on to those same convictions in their hearts. So how do we do that? Well, that takes us to another parenting strategy because we believe that we can use family rules to teach convictions to our children. We believe that the family rules that we set up in our family are really an outgrowth of our convictions as parents. We all have rules in family life. We have rules, some of them are written down on the refrigerator. Some of them are just understood. This is how we handle mealtime. This is how we handle homework. This is how we handle bedtime. This is how we handle conflict. This is how we handle anything in life. We got a rule for it. Those rules are an outgrowth of our internal convictions. And if we could use those somehow to help transfer those convictions into a child's heart, then we're helping them develop some healthy convictions.
It's very helpful if you're teaching your children about rules that you're connecting them to convictions or values that you have. I would suggest if you have young children that you set up 3 family rules: obey, show respect, and be kind. Just make it simple. Almost any offense that a young child might commit falls under one of those rules. So it gives you an opportunity not only to talk to them about those rules, but those are underlying convictions that we have in this family that make this family work. I like the story in Daniel chapter 1, verse 8. We all want our children to be like Daniel. You see, Daniel was taken out of his home in Jerusalem, brought way over to Babylon. And while he's in Babylon, he was asked to do something, to eat particular food. That's what he was asked to do. It's very interesting. His parents aren't around at this point. But the Bible tells us in Daniel chapter 1, verse 8, that he determined in his heart that he would not eat the king's food. Wow. That's pretty significant. Don't we wish that all of our children would determine in their hearts to not eat the king's food, in essence, as they're living life? We want them to do the right thing even when no one else is watching them. We want them to have convictions on the inside that drive them forward.
And that's why it's so important for us to talk to our children about our convictions. Explain the convictions behind the rules. If all we're doing is talking about the rules, the external guidelines that we set up, then children may want to abandon those rules, thinking they're just restrictive, they're just trying to keep me from having fun. I don't need my parents' rules. But if we talk about the convictions behind the rules, then our children begin to see an insight into our own hearts as well. Oh, Mom and Dad have really thought this through. This is why they make us do this. It's because they believe this. So when we talk about the convictions, we talk about the values behind the rules, we're helping children to translate these things into their own life as well, and to really be more responsive even to the rules, because they understand where they come from.
Our children need training in this area, though. This doesn't come easy for most of our children, and this is where a lot of the work of passing on our values takes place. How are we going to teach our children about our convictions? How are we going to teach them what makes this family operate? That's what we're trying to do with our children, trying to help them. And we can use the rules that we have in family life to communicate those convictions to children. So you're going to want to spend some time. Evaluate the convictions that you have. Evaluate the rules that you have. And how do they fit together? What makes them work? I remember working with one family, and they started looking at their rules. And one of their rules was on Sunday to Thursday night, everybody had to be in bed by 9 o'clock. But on Friday night, you could stay up as late as you want. I said, well, what's your value? What is the conviction behind that? Well, our conviction is that those are school nights, and so you need to be self-disciplined. I said, well, what about Friday? Well, on Friday, it's not a school night, so you can stay up as late as you want. I said, wait a minute, let's think about this. Are you saying that Monday through Thursday, you want your children to be self-disciplined, but on Friday, they don't have to be self-disciplined? Now, I'm not saying they had to keep the same bedtime for Friday, but what message were they communicating to their children? I'm telling you don't want to tell teenagers, on Friday you don't have to be self-disciplined, you can do whatever you want. What we're trying to do is teach our children what our convictions are like and why we have them. So these parents altered those rules and said, you could stay up until 10 o'clock on Friday evening. They just changed it because of the value they had without compromising some of the other values that they also share.
I think understanding the convictions behind our rules helps us as parents to stick with the rules and to reinforce them, to be consistent, to say, yeah, we really do want you to do this because we remember the convictions. And we may be tired and we may not want to enforce the rules on a particular day, but when we remember the convictions behind the rules, we realize the values we're trying to communicate to our children that helps us say, yes, this rule is important for you, even today, even when I'm tired. Because this rule is going to teach you a conviction about how to live life.
Ted's parents realized they had a problem. Ted was only 11 years old. He was already interested in wearing his clothes in a provocative style. He would spend his extra money on violent video games. He was not interested in church or the Lord and had a disrespectful attitude toward his parents, 11 years old. As the parents started working on this, they realized they needed to give their parenting to the Lord. They realized that they were emphasizing relationship, wanting to please their son. They wanted to have a good relationship with him, but in the midst of that, were creating some other problems in family life. They determined that they were going to do some different things. They started setting up some guidelines about how they were going to handle certain things coming into their home. They required some certain interaction between Ted and his parents. They made some adjustments in the way their relationship functioned. But the thing that made it work for them was that they sat down with their son and they said, son, we've got to talk to you about this. You may look at these as rules, but there are some things we're going to require of you here in family life. And you can think about them as rules as you want, but I want you to know they really come from who we are, because we're Christians. We want God living in every part of our lives. And so there are some things about our family that have to be a particular way. And so, in sharing of their convictions, they were able to communicate with their son. Now, it wasn't easy. Ted had a hard time responding to the new guidelines that were happening in his family. It took about 6 months to get this family back on track. But one of the keys that made it work was that parents shared convictions that they had in their hearts. This is who we are. That's why we're setting up these particular guidelines.
Children need to understand the convictions behind the rules, because over time, the rules change, but the convictions stay the same. And we want our children to understand those convictions as they set up their own rules for life. Take safety, for instance. We probably all have rules in our family about safety. If your child is 3 years old, you may have a rule that says you can't go out of the house without a grown-up. That's a safety issue. Well, when your child is 6 years old, he may be able to go play in the backyard by himself, but he can't go out the front door without an adult. We're still maintaining the value of safety, but we've changed the rule. Well, certainly when your child is 12 or 16, the rules are going to continue to change. When this child needs to check in, how far he's able to go, what he needs to ask permission for, and what he can do on his own. We set up rules about safety, but all along we're going to be teaching our children that safety is important. So when the child gets out on his own, maybe he's with a friend at 17 years old, a situation comes up and he doesn't have a rule about this situation, but he understands the conviction. I need to make choices based on what's safe and what's not safe. Then he's going to be able to determine how he's going to respond in that situation because he believes in that conviction of safety and he understands how the rules have changed over time and now he can determine how he's going to act in this situation, but he's going to remember that value behind the rules.
Let's talk about some convictions you have, for example. You might say, son, I want you to come to the table for dinner. And your son says, I'm not hungry. But you feel like saying, well, you need to come to the table anyway. If you say that, it must mean that your conviction is different than your son's conviction. His conviction is, we only come to the table to feed our face, to eat, to get some food off the plate. But you have a different opinion about mealtimes, that mealtimes are family times, and so that's what you're trying to communicate. So think about the rules that you have, why you do things the way you do in family life, and ask the question, what are the convictions that feed those particular rules?
I'm sure that you're already thinking about some of the ways you run your family. You have rules. Some are written down, and others are not. Take a few minutes to consider this question. What are some common family rules, and then what are the convictions that feed them?